Hello, I'll be presenting our work on IO deduplication. This is a work by Professor Aju Rangaswamy and me, Ricardo Koller, both from Florida International University. So IO deduplication is a storage solution that uses content duplication on disk for improving IO performance. First, by reducing the number of duplicated IOs, that is IOs to the same content, and second, by reducing seek distances. It's not the same as data deduplication, typically used on archival storage, such as Venti, or used in a copy and write disk for virtualized environments, such as the one used in QEMU. This technique, IO deduplication, consists of three techniques, really: content-based cache, dynamic replica retrieval, and selective duplication. So this talk is going to be divided by each of these techniques, and for each one of them, I'll be going to talk about motivation, design, implementation, and evaluation, technique by technique. It's important to notice that the motivation and evaluation of all of these techniques was performed using block traces, content block traces, collected at the block layer, for three workloads, which are this web VM workload, mail, and homes. The web VM is a virtualized environment with two virtual machines running the same OS, same kernel version, and a web server. This is at the computer science department at FIU. The second workload is the mail server, which is really the traces, the block layer for the mail server of our department. We thought that this was going to be an interesting workload with a lot of duplication because of duplicated mails, because of spam, forwarded lists, distribution lists and forwarded mails and things like that. The third workload is the homes workload, which is an NFS server that hosts the home directories of four members of our lab. All these members are using the same OS, mainly the same applications, they share projects. So that's same code, same papers, and a lot of duplicated content. It's important to notice that, for example, for the web VM case, the traces were collected at below the page cache, that is at the block layer of each VM itself, and then these traces just a merging of the two traces. So let's move on to the first technique, content-based cache. This idea is motivated by basically two observations, one related to frequency and the other related to recency. About frequency, this experiment, this figure shows the number of hits for a day of traces for each of the workloads using an infinite-sized cache. And here we see the number of hits divided in reads and writes. And the interesting thing to see here is that in all cases, data addressed by content is more frequent than data addressed by sector in reads. That's not the case for writes, and that's because these workloads were running in a journalified system, in this case EXT3, so there were a lot of write hits to the circular journal. Now the second observation, it's about recency. So we use two metrics, sector reuse distance and content reuse distance. Sector reuse distance is defined as the unique number of sector addresses between accesses to the same sector address. And content reuse distance is also the average of unique content between accesses to the same content. And in this case, we see that recency for content is shorter in all cases. And this is interesting, and it's especially interesting for caches because it means that these items need to be cache resident for less time. So that led us to the design of a content-based cache. This is basically the structure we're using, a simplified version. It has these yellow boxes and green boxes. Those are the basic components. The yellow ones represent sectors. You have a collection of sectors, and some of these sectors might be pointing to pages. A page is being pointed by a group of sectors. This group share the same content. And these sector entries can be searched both by content and by sectors, sector addresses. So what happened on a read is that read sector are searched for content, and in case of a miss, the I/O is the data is read, then hashed, then searched, and possibly inserted into the cache. We place this cache at the block layer that is below the regular page cache, and because of this, we decided to make this cache write through, that is to maintain the semantics of the page cache. And also because it is a second level cache, and usually the page cache it's using LRU, that is it might be some sense absorbing the recency of the stream, so we needed some replacement algorithm that was based on frequency instead. That's why we decided to use ARC adaptive replacement cache for this cache. For the evaluation, this is the testbed setup we use for evaluating all the techniques. So I'm going to explain this only once. This was implemented as a real system, as a module for a Linux kernel. The evaluation was performed using traces. We replayed traces, accelerating them at most at 100x. And we used a modified version of BT replay to skip the page cache and to use content for the replays. The measurement of IOs was taken using a block trace. And this was performed on a single Pentium 4 machine with 1 gigabyte of memory, and this running at 7,000 RPMs. So these are the results for the first experiment. In this case, we were trying to compare the hit ratio for a content-based cache compared to a regular sector-based one. And we used two setups, a small cache of 4 megabytes and a large one of 200 megabytes. And in the case of the sector cache, we couldn't use the regular page cache as it was really difficult to limit the size of it. So we used a modification of the cache I presented before to not deduplicate page entries inside the cache and not being able to search by content. And here we see that in all cases, the content-based one is more effective in terms of hit ratio. That is more IOs are being deduplicated in some sense. This is pretty much the pattern we saw in the motivation section with the infinite size cache. So next, we wanted to compare the performance of a different replacement algorithm, in this case LRU. And based on the ideas we had, because of that this is a second level cache and the first level cache is using LRU, and we thought that ARC would be more effective, then we tried, and it turns out that it's really that's the case. ARC is more effective, at least for smaller caches. And it's interesting to see that for writes, it's even more effective. So now let's move on to the second technique, dynamic replica retrieval. So the idea here was if there is duplication on disk, why not using for doing smart things like reducing I/O times? And first we tried to measure duplication, and we measured duplication using two metrics. One metric is called disk static similarity, and that is the total number of aligned 4K pages in the file system divided by the number of unique pages. These are excluding the zero pages and including free file system space. And the reason for this is that content on free file system space was used before by some applications, so there is content that might be used for something. I don't mean the actual free space, I mean the content can be used for something useful. And here we see that we have a... This gives us an idea of the average number of copies per block. So we see that, for example, for the web VM workload, we have more than 2 copies per block. That's more than the expected 2 copies because there were 2 VMs running on that environment. But that wasn't giving us the right picture because the workload might be using blocks, pages that are not that highly replicated on disk. So we used a different metric that we call the workload static similarity. In this case, this metric is defined as the average number of copies per block accessed in the trace, in the workload. In this case, this is using one day of traces. And something else, something more we did is that we prefer for the optimization I'm going to show you, we prefer a lot of blocks with a small number of duplicates than a few number of blocks with a high number of duplicates. So that's why in this figure we trim the number of copies, the maximum number of copies per block. For example, in the case of 100, that means that we are not including in the average the blocks that have more than 100 of copies. And here we see that, for example, for 100, again, the values we had on disk static similarity were an overestimate because we see that, for example, for the WebVM case where we had a 2.67, now we have around 2 copies per block. But still, with this number of copies, what could we do? Basically, we thought of a simple optimization, and that is to reduce seek distances by just indirecting requests based on the current position of the head. That is, choosing the duplicate that's closer to the head. This information can be easily retrieved from the cache structure I showed you before. For example, in this case, the yellow pages would be entries, sector entries, which don't have the actual page saved in cache. So you have the knowledge that these sectors are the same, but you don't have the page. The information about the current position of the head was based on completed reads. We didn't consider writes because writes might go just directly to the write cache of the disk and the head might not be actually moving. And because this was also placed at the block layer above the I/O scheduler, we had the problem that by indirecting requests, we might be decreasing the chances for merging by the scheduler. So we tackled this problem by a very simple technique, which is we maintain our own queue of requests, and whenever we had a request that we were about to indirect, we looked at if there were adjacent requests. If there is an adjacent request, we just don't indirect it. And these are the results. In these figures, we are showing per request disk read I/O time for all the workloads. And for each workload, we're comparing the vanilla one to the one with this technique implemented. And we see, in this case, the median. And in all cases, there is a decrease, there is an increase in performance. For example, for the WebVM workload, we had, remember, 2 copies per block, and here we see around 10% of decreasing and the median of per request read I/O time. For the case of the mail workload, where there was not that much duplication, this optimization wasn't able to do that much, less than 5% of reduction. So now let's move on to the third technique, selective duplication. Well, the obvious next step was, if duplication is good for reducing I/O time, why not creating extra duplication? And the question was what to duplicate. And this figure, this experiment showed us a possible answer. This figure is showing the content overlap in percentage for 7 intervals, and each interval compared to the first interval. And this is overlaps in working set, and a working set is the set of content accessed in each interval. So, for example, for the first interval, you see that the working set compared to the same working set has an overlap of 100%. And for the other intervals, something interesting to see here is that, for example, the WebVM has an overlap of more than 80% on almost all of the intervals. And that's really interesting. And that would be a perfect bunch of data to be cached on RAM, but it might be just too big. In these cases, for the mail workload, for example, this overlap is of more than a couple of gigabytes. So taking the assumption that these are too big to fit in cache, what could we do with it? And the basic question is why not duplicate it on disk for doing something like the dynamic replica retrieval technique I just presented. So that's the basis of the basic idea of the design for this technique, the selective duplication. And the idea is to just replicate the working set, for example, of the previous day or the most popular page content of the previous day in scratch spaces spread across the disk. In this case, we have five scratch spaces, and we could be replicating, for example, the complete working set of the previous day, that is the duplicated number of the duplicated data inside this scratch space, and just export a nice contiguous address space to the file system. And that's exactly what we are doing. And for the experiments, we tried this with 10 scratch spaces for all the workloads and a maximum size of 1 gigabyte for each scratch space. And we performed this duplication at night. That is for the experiments. And these are the results. So the first sub-figure is the sub-figure I showed you before in the dynamic replica retrieval section. And the second sub-figure, the one on the right, is the same one, but with this selective duplication feature on. And you see that, for example, for the WebVM workload, where we had an increase of per request disk read I/O time of 10%, we're not able to decrease it by around 30%. And for the case of the mail work, where we had almost no duplication, no improvements in I/O performance, now we are able to reduce it by around 10%. So then next we try to see what happens with all these techniques running at the same time. And we saw that because the cache is placed above the other two subsystems, the other two techniques, the cache optimization is not doing exactly the same thing. But because of the cache, the stream of requests is changing, so that dynamic replica retrieval technique is actually performing worse. In all the cases we saw. But still, with that decrease in performance, we see an overall increase, improvement of 28% for the mail workload, which was the workload with less amount of duplication, up to 47% for the WebVM workload. And again, this is just for read I/O times. And all of this comes with a cost. With an overhead. We studied the memory overhead and the CPU overhead. For disk, in the case of the experiments we performed, we had 10 scratch spaces of 1 gigabyte each, that is 10 gigabytes of overhead. For memory, the memory overhead depends on the number of pages that's on the cache, the amount of duplication that there is, and that's modeled by this working... workload static similarity metric that represents the average number of copies. And because we're making searches by using hash tables, we are also considering the size of the hash tables, which ideally would depend on the number of pages. But to make this simpler, I'm just going to show it as a different term. So that's the formula. So given a content cache of 1 gigabyte, static similarity of 4, that is 4 copies per page, and hash tables of 1 million buckets, the metadata is around 48 megabytes. That is a bit less than 5% of overhead in memory. For CPU, we saw that for that amount of pages and that amount of buckets, 1 million buckets, we have a constant lookup times for the hash table. That was a constant of around 1,000 cycles. But the big amount of CPU time was taken, for example, for read misses was taken on the hashing by the hashing function. In this case, we used MD5. We consider it to be faster than some other hashing functions. which took 100,000 cycles. And that translated for our machine running at 2 gigahertz is around 90 microseconds, which is at least is more is less than the milliseconds we are used to on the I/O world. Finally, some related work. So, for the ideas of dynamic replica retrieval and selective duplication, there is a lot of work. This idea of duplicating popular data to improve I/O performance was seen a lot of times in the past. I'm just going to reference a couple of ideas, a couple of work. The first one is FS2. FS2 is a system that duplicates popular blocks on a free file system space, and then using this duplication for reducing both seek times and rotational delays. And they were more concerned about the placement problem, where to place these duplicates. Next, the Borg work. The Borg is a system that duplicates popular blocks in a dedicated partition. That's to reduce locality, to improve locality and sequentiality. That's on I/O performance. About this idea of content address storage, this was first presented by the Venti work on the context of archival storage. And finally, this idea of I/O deduplication, deduplicating I/Os to the same content, that was mentioned somehow indirectly in the Satori paper, in Satori work, especially in the context of this copy and write, this sharing mode that Satori can run on. And yeah, but this was not exactly the goal of Satori. But with some modifications, it can do. It can have this idea of content-based cache. Finally, some limitations and future work. Well, a big limitation is that we are duplicating the pages of the cache. We have a different cache than the page cache, so it will be nice to integrate it. This dynamic replica retrieval idea works only for one disk, at least for the design we have. We are not seeing variable sizes chunks. We think there can be more advanced and more better fitted replacement algorithms for content. The same for I/O scheduling. And the last thing, for write requests, we have a write through cache and we are not indirecting writes. So the question will be what to do with writes. Finally, conclusions. So we saw that for some systems where content is more frequent and is more frequent than sector, and reuse distances are shorter for content compared to sector, this idea of I/O deduplication and a content-based cache can be very effective. And the second conclusion is that on disks where there is duplication, this duplication can be used for things like reducing I/O times. So. Thank you. This is the page of the project. In the very near future, we are planning to publish the traces we use for the motivation and evaluation, and so you'll be able to get them from this address. Thank you. I will be glad to take any questions.
Irfana with VMware. Very interesting work. So in a practical implementation, how would you ensure the consistency between your hashes and the actual blocks on disk? Because you're not involving the file system here, as far as I understand. So that creates a lot of worry in my mind that you might actually end up being inconsistent if you don't catch every single I/O going on. Let's say somebody opens a file system or block device directly, for example.
Yeah, that's an assumption we are making, that all the modifications of the blocks will come directly through our system. So that's really an assumption we make.
Okay, so this would lend itself to, let's say, an implementation in the file system, perhaps, that would eliminate those things? your driver could get unloaded.
Sorry, again, please?
I'll take it offline.
Okay, sorry.
Hi, Mark Lobish from HP Labs. So it looked like most of the Whisker plots you had were very overlapping. I mean, my memory of statistics is kind of hazy, but doesn't that mean you can't draw any conclusion about which of them is better than the other?
Well, yes, that means, yeah, that's true. That could mean that in many cases we are not really improving that much. But at least for the, I mean, we didn't show average, but the average really increases. I mean, the average is really...
The average is the red part, right? The red line is the average?
Yeah, the average is I mean, on average we are improving, yes.
Well, I think statistically you can't tell, is what I'm wondering.
Well, based on this whisker plot, you cannot tell, but we have the numbers for average as well, yes.
Maybe a suggestion. Thank you for turning it on. I just have a comment or a suggestion. You mentioned that you might want to consider integrating this with the page cache
yes.
for better efficiency and lack of and avoiding the redundancy. One thing to consider is what happens if you're on a system where the page memory is deduplicated. There is such a product that some of you may have heard of. VMware's ESX system, then you can just use a conventional cache and expect that the pages will be deduplicated by the memory deduplication process.
Yeah, actually, on the original design, we were leaving this duplication to some other technique, like the difference engine or this ESX optimization. But it will be much cleaner to just do it ourselves. I mean, just really integrating those two caches because we already have that information.
Right, unless you're in a context where the RAM has its own duplication for various reasons, like highly similar VMs running together. And then one deduplication algorithm can solve both problems.
Yes, yeah, in that case that would be enough, really, yeah.
Can I mention one thing to the previous question, related point?
I think the difference is that in ESX, once the page comes into the memory, at that point it would use the hash of the page and then do the deduplication and would keep a single copy of the page. But I think with this work, you may just avoid that I/O completely and you won't even fetch it into the memory. And that is something which is an extra benefit over doing just in-memory deduplication.
Sam Hosky, Monix. Just one quick question. So you're talking about 90 microseconds of added latency. That's obviously great for disks, but in a solid-state kind of environment, have you given any thought to how you could reduce latency of your algorithm, something like that?
Excuse me, I couldn't hear. Can you repeat, please?
Yeah, so my question is around solid-state disks. This kind of added latency is not going to be acceptable. It's a really cool solution, but 90 microseconds is going to kill any kind of latency benefit from an SSD. So have you given any thought to how you could reduce your algorithms overhead?
We could use a faster hashing function, and we could also reduce the number of hashes we have by using, for example, Bloom filters. But I really don't have a number in mind of how much the reduction would be.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, Margot Seltzer from Harvard. This is kind of clever. So the way I think about it, before you introduce the proactive duplication, is that you can effectively make your cache bigger because the effective cache size is bigger. So I guess the question is, if I were trying to convince people this was a good idea, how much more memory would I have to add if I weren't doing what you were doing? And forget about the fact that now they're two separate caches, right? Imagine that I have an integrated cache. I'm using your stuff in my VFS cache. Do you have a sense of sort of the effective benefit you're getting as to, my 1 gigabyte cache acts like a 1.5 gigabyte cache? How much benefit am I getting there? And if you don't have the numbers, that's cool. I think I can work them out with enough math and figuring out the right things, but...
Yeah, I really have to think about it, but sorry.
Okay. One last question.
Okay, Bill Belaski from Microsoft. If I understood correctly, you're using MD5 to do lookups in the cache, and if you get an MD5 hit, then you return the data there.
Yes.
But MD5 is a broken hash function. It's no longer cryptographically secure. So the consequence of that is that an attacker could write a bit pattern on your disk that caused people to get wrong data. Do you have a feel for how much the performance would be affected if you switched to a still secure function like SHA-256?
Well, we saw that the CPU overhead is mainly taken by the hash function. So, really, I think the SHA hashing function is taking around 300,000 cycles, so the CPU time will be three times more, more or less. And yeah, I didn't know that problem of the MD5.
Yeah, MD5 is no longer useful for security purposes.
Thank you.
Just thank the speaker once again.